Blog Talk Radio.
Living Out Loud is hosted by Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, a research psychologist, psychoanalyst, and author of What Price Power, an in-depth study of professional women in a relationship. She is an expert on depression, women's issues, and attaining happiness. Dr. Birnbaum has been featured on Oprah 2020 and some of the biggest TV radio venues in the world. Now, without further ado, here's your host of Living Out Loud, Dr. Frieda Birnbaum.
Hello and welcome, everyone. It's going to be a really interesting show. Why is religious fanaticism growing? And that is a wonderful question. Our guest today is Paula Faust, I believe it's pronounced, and she has firsthand knowledge about some of the things that are going on that are trapping people into this religious riot where they're losing their lives. So that's going to be something that we're all looking forward to hear about, because we can definitely use some kind of different perspective on this theory.
And Dr. Frieda, before we, Paul will be on with us in a few minutes, and before we begin, where can people learn more about you?
Well, I have a website, Dr. Frieda, and they can see all my shows. I'm a motivational speaker as well. And I wrote a book, What Price Power, and they can listen to me on this show.
You're listening on this show, and this week, I mean, you want to talk about a very interesting week. You've got the German Wings plane that crashed, killed 150 people, and now there are reports that the co-pilot did it on purpose. I want to, Dr. Frieda, what is the mentality of a person who does this? Do you feel that because they say that this person did it, that it was a cold, calculating act, that the person had planned for months to do something like this? Or is this something of appear to be a behavior of someone who just kind of snaps and loses it in the heat of the moment and decides to do this?
This is somebody who is has some mental difficulties, obviously. And, you know, when this happens, people that are angry and they feel misunderstood often take that anger out at innocent standbyers, and this is exactly what happened. He had broken up with his relationship of many years. He had depressive episodes, and he was in a situation that was powerful, that he could make some decisions, and that was the fact that he was going to take the lives of other people around him. So he did not look depressed, but that does not mean that he didn't have that depression inside himself, because a lot of these people, they don't live in reality. Their reality is very different, and they see that their pain is immense, and it's the spur of the moment. But here, I just need to tell your listeners, the ones that do get these depressive... Oh, our listeners, or my
listeners,
whatever.
Yep.
So, you know, these depressive episodes do come, and happiness is just a fleeting moment. And depression, it does not necessarily mean that it's going to be there forever. So that also leaves events in our lives, situations that happen, disappointments that happen. This can all lead to depression, and sometimes it's helpful. It's a time for working things out. But also, viewers need to know that it's a chemical imbalance. It's not necessarily a mental illness. So it's nothing that you have to be responsible for. You did not necessarily cause it. It could be genetic as well. When that happens, you are someone who needs to spend the time and reassess your life and see what is going on. And most of all, there's no shame to asking for help, because like anything that we need to fix, we should go ahead and feel good enough to feel significant enough that we can make these changes in our lives. So all this is important, and sometimes there is clinical depression. You're born with it, and you feel like this dark cloud is hanging over you. And that is also chemical, it's biological, and medication often helps with that. So there's all kinds of reasons for depressions in our lives.
depression. But when is it? When is the depression turn into something where it manifests into something so horrific like this, where you know a person is depressed and then they respond to the depression outwards? And I'm just curious, when a person does a horrific act like this, does it in any way, shape, or form make them feel good, or is it just something that kind of you know takes their mind off their pain?
Well, that's an excellent question, and you know there's a term for that. It's called pseudo-commando, and it's driven by strong feelings of anger and resentment and feeling persecuted or grossly mistreated, and they want payback time. And this is often after a major loss of love or work, and so they have revenge fantasies, and they think about doing something to other people that they don't even know about. This comes from lack of self-esteem, and their psychotic behavior is the fact that they're broken away from their own reality. And these are all the things that induce this kind of devastation around them.
Okay, so it's...
talking about this pilot, Brian, you know, he's someone who had an illness, and he didn't report it. And then we went ahead and airlines went ahead and hired him anyway, in spite of the fact that they knew that he had some mental problems, and it was something that was done in a way that took a lot of lives, and this is a reason why we need to change the way we process information about pilots, that these pilots should be tested just as rigorously as the airplanes that they fly. We make sure that every little screw is in tight and everything's working. And we need to make sure that their screws are in as well, tight. Never thought of that, but sounds appropriate. So anything else you'd like to know about this person? Andrea Lubitz was his name. Quiet. He was a quiet person. Neighbors said he was a nice person.
Just bring up something
himself?
Real quick.
Yeah.
About the fact that people, it's always these people that are particularly quiet. I mean, I know it's going to sound funny, or may sound funny, but should people be very aware of people who are quieter? Are quieter type people tend to be the ones who are maybe holding more things in, or they're like little, you know, geysers of emotional activity that's waiting to burst? Should we, you know, be concerned if somebody is acting a little bit too quiet? Is there a difference between somebody who is particularly shy, introverted, as opposed to somebody who is, you know, building up a lot of tension and anger inside?
Well, there's truth to that. People who are quiet, we don't trust. We feel they're holding information in that they're not telling us about, and so therefore we don't feel comfortable with these people. So being quiet is really often a heads up. What are they keeping inside themselves that we don't know about? And we often go to this negative place. So there's a lot of truth to somebody who's very quiet and somebody who is not telling the truth about his depressive episodes. He did tell some people that he was depressed. He took time off from his studying to be a pilot, took 6 months off, and... he came back again, and they took him again, and there should be a precedence over some kind of depression and being a pilot. Maybe they shouldn't have anyone who's been depressed to fly a plane where other people's lives are at risk. I don't think that's too, difficult to do, and I don't think it's overreacting to a situation when someone has that kind of responsibility.
Great. And Dr. Frieda, Paula Faust is with us. Would you like to introduce her?
Great.
Would you like to introduce her?
You can go ahead because I'm just opening up her file right now. So I would love it if you could introduce her.
Paula Faust, who we're very thankful to be with us, she knows firsthand how religion can be misused. She's produced 5 films on religion and religious tolerance, and she's going to talk about why religious fanaticism is growing. Ms. Faust, welcome to the program. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's an excellent question. So why is it growing? What is going on behind the scene that it's getting uglier rather than better?
Well, as everyone knows, we've been having religious intolerance hit us politically and causing wars for thousands of years. And it seems that certain groups are reverting back to a medieval viewpoint of the world. And one reason that's often cited for that is that a lot of the media that's being beamed all over the world showing, for instance, a Western culture where things are very open, that it's found to be quite threatening by societies that are very fundamental. So that's one reason. But if you look back in history, there's just been so many wars waged in the name of religion. And of course, it's not religion itself that is at fault, but it's rather how certain individuals will misuse religion and manipulate religion. And when we researched for our book and film, Not in God's Name, we found that there's three main causes for religious intolerance.
And what are those three causes? Yeah.
The first one is political manipulation. When a political leader or someone who wants to be a political leader misuses a group of people and manipulates them by taking something out of ancient scripture that was created for societies, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, that's not really the way we're behaving today. And the second reason for, or the second way that religions can be misused are for territorial disputes. And that's what you see in the Middle East, and that's what you also see in Kashmir between Pakistan and India, which are the two biggest hotspots in the world, right?
That's right.
Yes, and then the third way that religions are misused or manipulated is through the exclusive claim to truth, and that is the very most serious, probably one of the most serious reasons. Because that is when someone says, well, you know, your image of God is different than mine, and I can't accept that, and you have to have the same image I do, or else I have to kill you.
That's pretty pathetic and pretty barbaric when you think about it, when you know that everyone wants the same thing. It's almost as if there's this jealousy and competition in a small family as it is, with the world around us. I know that in certain books that people read, religious books, it says, you know, kill the Jews. And this is when they're very, very young, these kids read them, to hate certain religions. So you don't even get started in the right direction. And that's very scary to have this kind of hate implemented into at such a young age. Oh, we can't get rid of that, those books, or we can't get rid of that religion, and yet you say there is a way to stop this cycle of hatred. How would you recommend that was stopped?
Just what you were speaking about, Doctor, one main thing is education and teaching young people to look at our similarities and to learn that all of the religions, all of the creeds, actually have in common so many things, so many similarities, ways of worship, prayers, lights, candles, songs, scripture. You can go on and on. There's so many similarities. But underlying the values in all religions, they are human values. And human values, it's sort of like taking them out of the realm of religion and teaching them as human. It's as simple as the idea of being as kind to your brother as to yourself, the golden rule. You'll find kindness and caring and all of these same values running throughout all religions. So rather than focusing on the differences, young people need to be taught to focus on the similarities.
Well, that would be wonderful if we could just provide the same information to everyone. Wouldn't that be great? And maybe one day there will be a way
Yeah, what's starting to happen right now is in the major universities around the United States and soon around the world, I'm sure, too, such as MIT and Stanford, they are studying compassion and its effects on the human brain. And they're taking compassion training into schools and trying to get it into the curriculum. So it is something that's in all religions, compassion. But they're taking it out and teaching it in a secular manner. So I don't have to come to you and say, okay, well, you belong to that faith and I don't, so we're going to argue. You know, we're both learning the same thing, which is compassion. And that's one good way to approach it. Because people can't look at the differences and argue over it if it's something universal.
That's absolutely true. I mean, wouldn't it be great if we could be more like Mother Teresa have this kind of compassion? What was she like when you met her?
Oh, she was just so humble. You can't even believe it. You know, and she would pick up people of all faiths, not asking, are you a Muslim, are you a Hindu, are you a Jew, are you Catholic? You know, if someone was laying in the gutter and they were dying, they were picked up and they were taken care of. They were taken to her home for the dying. Or she had about 100 babies each day in every one of her orphanages in every main city in India. So what really struck me the most about her is just her humility. She was so down to earth, and she stood there and held my hands the whole time she was talking to me. And I felt really funny because I felt like, why am I taking her time? She's so busy and she can do so much for humankind. And I thought, you know, who am I? I kept saying, Mother, you must be very busy. I mean, it makes
me
feel funny.
Can you share with us what she said to you? Can you share that?
Yes, absolutely. She said, love until it hurts.
Until it hurts. Wow.
Yes. I mean, she was so without self. She was really directed and focused on everyone else, on the other, you know. And she was very kind and just tiny. She kind of came up to about my chest. She's so short, you know. She was really a itty-bitty person who had the power of the world behind her. You know, it's amazing to see. She was in a plane crash in South America, and she walked out of it alive.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, what you said, love, and it's just amazing that, you know, she walked out of it alive, and I wonder if fate was on her side, more than fate. But when you said that, you know, love until it hurts, I thought to myself, wouldn't it be great, all these people that are so into themselves, they're so miserable, they forgot about all that stuff, and concentrated on everyone else, how much happier they would really be. It's a shame. It's so
and
true.
That's exactly what they're finding in the research they're doing on compassion. They're finding that altruism actually lights up parts of the human brain that are associated with feeling good. It's like, you know, people used to talk a lot in the 80s about sports when they first discovered that you would get a lot of endorphins, you know, going through your body, making you feel good. When you ran, everyone used to be running on the sidewalk. Remember that?
Right.
And in a similar manner, you know, just being kind, kindness, it's actually healthy for you. And, you know, these are the top scientists.
That's so important. We often find this out later on when we are more aware of others. And wouldn't it be great if we could just always live our lives in such a way that was inspiring and making some difference, and we would just be able to accomplish so much more than if we had to accomplish things just for ourselves. So what was the one thing that stands out in your mind? You met Dalai Lama as well, and many inspiring religious leaders. Does anybody stand out, or anything that they said stand out most, or maybe what you said already that you can think of?
Absolutely. One thing that's very interesting about the Dalai Lama, first of all, he has the same humility as Mother Teresa. You know, they're not, they don't have anything pompous about them. They don't have anything, you know, saying, look at me, you know, quite the opposite. And what he says, it's very interesting. First of all, the Dalai Lama, he's dedicated himself to religious tolerance. It's one of his you know, main commitments in his life. And he says that the world needs different religions. And he explains the reasoning behind that is that there's so many different types of people with different things in their personalities, and they're attracted to different images of God, different practices, different folklore, various clothing and houses of worship, you know. And although we have that underlying, we have many underlying similarities between faiths, he said it's wonderful that we have the different faiths, because you may be attracted to one thing, I may be attracted to the other. But yet, all of these paths have one shared destination.
And what is that?
The shared destination, it can either be called the higher self, it can be called, you know, in some religions it's called enlightenment. Catholics believe we're going to die and go to heaven. I mean, there's a lot of different descriptions, but yet, you know, people that study, for instance, the dying process, or those who have, you know, gone to the other side, like Raymond Moody, I think, is a top researcher in the out-of-the-body experience or the death experience. And people from all faiths are reporting, you know, the same story, a very similar story about going through the tunnel of light, seeing all their relatives, things like that. So it's very interesting that even science now is probing and studying and finding that there's a lot of similarities, and hopefully we'll be able to overcome some of the differences with the help of scientific research as well.
You know, as long as we don't fight about the differences, it all sounds wonderful. It's just that it seems that we compete against who is has the better religion and who is right and who is wrong. And you're saying they're all great and colorful, and we could really identify with each other through these religions. Now, it says that you almost lost your life to fanaticism. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I was in New Delhi when Indira Gandhi was assassinated. I just flew in at that moment, and I got off the plane, and the entire city became absolutely silent. It was very eerie. And then, over the course of a few hours, when it was reported that her Sikh bodyguards had shot her — Sikhism is a religion that was founded about 550 years ago in India. It was an offshoot of Hinduism, but it sort of took teachings from both Hinduism and Islam, and in the holy book, it has teachings of both, you know, written. But anyway, it was her Sikh bodyguards who assassinated her. And so a few hours later, suddenly, we were standing on a terrace there of our hotel, where it's normally very, very busy. And the streets were just absolutely deserted. And then there were columns of fire and smoke rising all around us, because gangs had gone out and lit on fire all of the businesses owned by Sikhs.
Wow.
So it was very scary, and what I went through wasn't even as bad as some of my friends. Some of my friends were coming across the border from Pakistan to India at that time, and they actually saw beheadings and everything. And it was just, it was so chaotic. So I had to jump into a bus to go to the airport to try to fly out of the country, because it was, you know, rapidly descending into total mayhem. And all these huge crowds of hoodlums would try to block the way as our bus was going, you know, to the airport, which is about, I'd say, a 40-minute drive. And our driver kept trying to miss all the crowds and keep us all safe. And then one bunch of hoodlums actually was able to stop the bus. They had roadblocks put out and everything.
Wow.
And they were banging on the side of our bus, and they got the doors open, and they came inside, and they came right up into our faces. And I was wearing a Sikh symbol around my neck. But luckily, it was right below my blouse. And if they had pulled on it, they would have seen it. So they were taking off Sikhs to kill, and they were looking for Sikhs to murder in revenge. So it's that whole
idea.
I'm
telling you, I'm sorry, go ahead. It's just amazing that what you went through. But I'm listening. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the whole idea of revenge keeps the cycle going. And what has happened a lot in India is between Hindus and Muslims, usually it isn't Sikhs, usually it's Hindus and Muslims, a lot, you know, whenever something happens, then another group will come and go, you know, burn masses of people and buildings in revenge. So that's been going on. There's been a cycle of it going on about like from the 80s through the early 2000s. It's been quiet for a while now, thank goodness. But there was that big attack in Mumbai that happened when they went into the Taj Mahal Hotel and the Oberoi Towers. And a friend of mine, who I actually interview in the book, Not in God's Name, Making Sense of Religious Conflict, he was trapped in that hotel for about 5 or 6 days. While all of that was going on.
Wow, what an answer to my question. So I guess you're like Mother Teresa, you were also saved from
I was lucky. I was very lucky.
You from these horrendous acts, or maybe it was meant to be as well. There's always a reason for fate, and just a wonderful example of what religion should mean to people. And if they could read your book, Not in God's Name, that's something that would be inspiring for everyone. And your message is something that we could all learn from. The question I'd like to ask you is, where can people find out more about you?
Well, the book website is notingodsnamebook.com. And
okay.
I also did a film about this, which was on PBS, and the film website is notingodsname.com.
Okay, that sounds great. And any other projects that you're doing now? Anything else?
Yes, we're just...
Well, this is enough, but go ahead.
Yes, we're just finishing a film with Anne Frank's remaining family. One of them just passed away last week. It was her cousin. Yeah, Buddy Elias, her cousin, who was her best friend growing up. And what happened is there's an archive in New York named EVO. It's the Institute for Jewish Learning, and it was founded by Sigmund Freud, Albert Einstein, and two other people. And when the Holocaust happened, as we all know, you know, during the Holocaust, people were hiding books and hiding literature and anything they could to save it from being destroyed by the Nazis. And, you know, the wisdom of the Jewish people, basically, that was all recorded. And it was transferred over. What was found, I think, by the U.S. Army, and then it was sitting there on train, you know, at a train station in big wooden crates, and it was sent over to New York some years later. And so the EVO archives was sort of reconstituted in New York. And one of the volunteers was going through all these manuscripts and records from, you know, the time of the Holocaust, and she came across this whole cache of documents of Anne Frank's father, Otto Frank.
Wow.
Yeah, back and forth with the U.S. Immigration Service. He was trying to get their family visas to save them.
How interesting.
And every country in the world, you know, turned their backs on the Franks. And that's how they ended up going into hiding in the secret annex.
This is going to be an amazing project. So this is your next project.
Yeah,
I
we're
guess
just
you're
finishing
keeping
it
very
right
busy.
Now.
You're finishing it right now.
Yeah.
And where could we look for that when it's finished?
If people go to noasylumfilm.com, they can sign up. And then they will be notified when it's coming out. It's going to be taken to the film markets at Cannes, which is mid-April. And it'll start on international TV first, all over the world. And it's a really, really moving film. And a few of the reasons for that is that Buddy Elias, Anne Frank's cousin, he speaks in the film very, very eloquently. And then Major Leonard Birney, who was one of the officers who walked in and liberated Bergen-Belsen, the camp where Anne and her sister Margot died. He's in the film. And
amazing.
They're just phenomenal stories.
Well, I'll tell you that you are really doing a lot of wonderful things for people who can identify with all kinds of religions and can feel compassion with one another. This is a service to humankind, and this is I want to tell you how much this is appreciated. So I'd like the viewers to know your name, Paula. My pleasure, Paula Faust. And they can reach you again one more time. I'd like them to hear your site. It's
notingodsname.com and notingodsnamebook.com. And the new film is noasylumfilm.com about Anne Frank's family. New information.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you so much, and thanks for being on our show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
And Dr. Frieda, where can people learn more about you? And you can learn more about Dr. Frieda by going to her website at drfrieda.com.